Life Audio.
You are listening to The Becca Cook Show with your host, Becca Cook. For more information about Beckett and his ministry, visit his website at beckettcook.com. To help support the podcast, visit patreon.com/The Becca Cook Show. Please consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a 5-star rating.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. Today I have a special guest, Marc Tabayou. It's a French name. And he's going to tell us his really an amazing testimony. And I'm excited to have him on here. Again, my friend Tom, Tom Nearing, who was on the show, recommended this guy. And so I'm excited to have Marc on the show. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Welcome, Marc.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Good to have you here. So Tom Nearing, our mutual friend, told me that you had an amazing story. So tell me, were you raised in a Christian home?
Yes. I was raised in a Christian home. Thankful to be raised in a Christian home. Kind of different situation, just having grown up in the southeast of France, in a very secular country, post-secular country, with seven brothers and sisters, I'm one of seven brothers and sisters, my dad being a pastor and my mom being the missionary that went to France like 40 years ago, and met my dad there. So that's kind of my past. There's not very many Christians in France, so it's an interesting place to be as a Christian.
I know. It's kind of like the hardest mission field there is. Western Europe is really hard. It's a hard mission field.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, so the stats, last I've looked at the stats, there's 1% Christians in, like 1% of the French population that call themselves Christians, and that can be like Orthodox Christian all the way to, Pentecostal Christian, really out there. So that's kind of like what makes the population of the Christian community. But that being said, my parents are, so my father is had a church, grew up inside of the church with his father being a Christian, a pastor as well. So I'm kind of in a lineage of pastors. So yeah, that's a little bit of my background story as a Christian.
And when you were growing up, were the French like locals, were they receptive to hearing the gospel? Or hearing,
no.
Like, were they receptive to like a Christian pastor?
No, they were not. No, actually it's kind of like the laughing stock of the town. It's funny because they have no dignity for any kind of religion. A lot of call themselves Buddhists just because it's kind of like the new agey thing to do, to be. And yeah, it's really hard because I think that everybody's grandmother was like, oh yeah, my great grandmother was Catholic. She went to mass on Christmas and Easter. So that's what made her Catholic. So therefore I must be sort of Catholic, but there's no understanding of like who Jesus is, what he's done. And yeah, like the whole story of the Bible has just completely been like wiped out. So
Well,
Yeah,
yeah. I
so.
mean, during the French Revolution, I don't know if it was the Jacobins or Robespierre or whoever, but they turned Notre Dame, the cathedral in Paris, into the Temple of Reason. And so that's kind of like what, they kind of that period, the French Revolution was so awful. And but that period kind of erased religion off off the map, because it was like religion is unenlightened, and so yeah, that's
Separation
there's a
of
big
church and
struggle.
state. Exactly. So that's where my mother went back to. She was actually a Catholic. She grew up sort of Catholic in Chicago. So that's why I speak English. And she moved to France and married my dad. And every time I tell anybody that I either go to church or my mother was a missionary and my father a pastor, they're like, "What kind of a sect are you part of? Like, what do you guys eat?" They just have a bunch of ideas that just kind of come to their
Do you
minds, and I'm
drink
like,
Kool-Aid?
yeah, exactly, right. So,
Yes. Okay,
yeah.
so you're growing up in France, and how did you get saved, or when did you come to faith in Christ, like personally?
Yeah, great question. Actually, I always had a deep faith in God ever since I was a kid. I think the legacy that my parents left us was a really huge blessing, just to be able to know that, hey, there's somebody that is greater than us that's out there. We call him God. He is your father, first and foremost. And I never really remember a time where I kind of converted to Christianity. I always knew that God was real and true. Now, I had a lot of, discovery of who God was in my relationship, especially in regards to my identity and things like that throughout the years, and always putting things back into question, but not the existence and who God is in my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And so did you, when you were growing up, did you have a period where you kind of, as you said, like your identity, did you have a period of kind of a crisis of faith, or was there?
For sure. So I kind of to give a little bit of background, my whole struggle is around same-sex attraction. And so I grew up in a family where I say fairly religious, but just very Christian and very like we know what the right path is and we know what the wrong path is. And when I finally figured out that I had strong emotions towards the same sex and not really knowing what to do with them, especially in a family where we really didn't talk about sex or sexuality, being anything about your body was just kind of like sort of frowned upon. You didn't really talk about it because nobody's going to give you any very firm answers. And so when I found this out, I was just really kind of rocked. I grew up with so I'm a tw I am one of seven brothers and sisters, and I have an identical twin brother. And so kind of growing up, I was so kind of coming back to, struggling with my identity. I think it kind of started there where me and Luke, we were compared to our whole lives. Like Luke is this way and Mark's that way, but really they're sort of the same. I joke and
How old were you when you realized you were attracted to the same sex?
I was like probably 12 or 13,
Okay.
something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not really being able to make the assessment by myself. It took a while, I know.
Was Luke in the same situation or no?
No, he was not. And so that's where I was like, actually, that's where I started getting pretty mad. I don't know if I can say pissed with God, being like, "Wait, what the heck, Lord? Like, I'm here and I'm wanting to be faithful to you, and I'm never going to put my Christian walk back into question." And yet, like, this is the biggest thing. So in my family too, my father did not see the gay community as ever being a very good thing, and he saw it as the destruction of the family unit, which in ideology I understand, but the way that he talked about gay people and same-sex attracted people was just very off-putting. And I didn't really know where to put myself. I didn't really know how to talk about it with, I didn't talk about it with anybody inside of my family because it was just not going to be something that I was ever going to want to share. And I was like, this is off limits, right? But I had kept on struggling with this and being like, Lord, what is that you want to do with me? Like, I'm trying to be faithful, and yet you have permitted this to kind of stick to my skin. And that's a French expression, coller à la peau. But so it's just kind of like terrible because I really wondered, like, what are you trying to do with me, God? And sort of really mad because I was not able to express myself or express what I was feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so how, and then did you ever have a moment where you wanted to pursue that life at all, or like move to Paris and, you know, whatever, like
Yeah,
live
yeah,
that
yeah.
life?
No, I mean, I think that it was always a temptation to be like, okay, where are we going now from this? Because I clearly have this inside of me, and I don't really know where to go or who to talk to about it. And it was always a big temptation, for sure. But I also knew that my life was anchored in Christ. Like, you know, Christ was at the forefront of my mind, and like, okay, God, I know what you have for my life, and same sex or you know, the gay lifestyle is not going to be part of it. And yet, this is really frustrating, and I don't know what to do with it. So it's kind of like living in a tug and pull. I left for Costa Rica after like having struggled with this, you know, until I was 22. Actually, let me backtrack.
We'll be right back after this short break.
I went to on a mission, a couple of mission trips throughout my young adult life, and I went to a place called Guinea Conakry to visit some, what do you call that? Some missionaries from our church out there, and it was in the middle of the bush, like nowhere to be seen. And basically, I was like there to sort of discover, you know, like another country and you know, learn about what God had for me. But it was just 2 weeks, it was not much. But when I was there, I was like confronted with hydrocephalus, so I started taking a pill to go up for antimalarials, right? And my head started like literally feeling like it was going to blow. It was horrible pain. And I was like, oh my gosh, what's happening right now?
What is hydros? I mean, no, I know what syphilis is, but what is hydrosyphilis from water? I guess you get it from
Having,
water.
yeah, so inflammation of the brain, but it's because of the overpressurizing of the spinal fluid that's inside of your brain. Does that make sense? So your brain and your spinal cord produces spinal fluid, and so
Yeah.
you create it, and then your body like flushes it out by several
And
different
so, but
systems.
how did this happen to you?
And I started taking an anti-malarial pill when I was in Africa. One of the side effects is that you have this buildup of
Oh, okay.
what do you call that? Spinal fluid. The negative side of things is that I didn't know I had a malformation from birth with the aqueduct of Sylvius inside of the back of. It permits the fluid to go from one side of the brain to the other ventricle and flush it out naturally. So mine just kind of got blocked up while I was there. And I kid you not, that was probably the worst pain I'd ever felt. I have a whole week of being in pain and I don't remember any of it. I was completely, actually, I was ready to die and I had to get medevaced back from where I was in the bush to Guinea Conakry, up to Paris, and back down to the city of Grenoble, where I'm from. And one of the things is that when I got there, I lost my eyesight. And they were like, hey, you should be dead by now. We don't really know how it is that you've been able to survive this. And all this time that I was really struggling with this pain, I was like, finally, I'm dying. This is like kind of my way out of life because I don't really have much to live for. I am same sex attracted and I really don't want to keep on living this, you know, this life where I'm just kind of condemned to live on this earth without ever having a partner. And then I get brain surgery twice and I get shunted and I am back on track with life and just being like heavily depressed because I still had to struggle with same-sex attraction. And I was like, what the heck, God? Like I was there. I could have died and gone to heaven and be fine and like there would not be any
I
problems.
know. I know.
So that's kind of like the struggle that I had with my it was like a start to where I was like, okay, I think God has something for me. So anyways, I'm just kind of telling you my story. Is that cool?
Yeah, that's great.
The way
Good. Go
that,
ahead. Go ahead.
yeah. So then a couple of years down the road, I'm like, okay, I am leaving for Costa Rica. That's where I went to Bible school. And I wanted to go and discover what God had for me. I was like, hey, I'm going to push you to the limits. I'm not going to fight anymore. I'm going to let say like, hey, I'm going to go and do my thing. I believe that you exist, but I'm going to fully offset that on you. You're going to be the one to work, kind of like the way Abraham, parted all those animals and he didn't get to walk through. It was only God that walked through. I'm
Yeah.
like, you're going to do the same for me. Like, I'm done trying to struggle with this. And I really had to kind of search for who I was and where I was in Christ and all of that. So anyways, it was a big time of research for me while I was in Costa Rica, thinking like, okay, I'm understanding a little bit more of where my faith is at. But then while I was in Costa Rica, I had a call out in I had to go to the hospital again. And this is what was not related to my brain. It was related to my gut. And it was related to, they said I had testicular cancer. And I'm like, what the? Like, I don't
Oh my
understand, God.
God.
What are you trying to,
What
like,
is.
I literally was at the bottom of the barrel. I was just like, I don't know what you want to do with me right now. Like, okay, you want to strip my identity. I'm already feeling like I'm a very meek man. I don't feel much of my manhood just as I am, but you're taking this away from me as well. And it was a really hard time because I had to be like, what do you want me to grasp or grab out of this time? So anyways, that was just a time of struggle where I had to kind of have God revealed to me, being like, look, everything that the world says, everything that your parents have to say, everything that you think a man should be, I'm telling you those things are not. And I'm going to call you my son, and it's in spite of me living inside of you. That's who makes you a man, not all of these other things that kind of color and taint it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So did you go back to France to deal with the cancer, like testicular cancer, or did you stay in Costa Rica?
Yeah, so when I was there, they were like, they actually operated on me, and I went through a couple rounds of treatments, heavy treatments, and actually was able to stay in Costa Rica. My parents visited me, and it was, I, by the grace of God, I'm out of it free. So I'm very thankful for that. But just being like, still have that time of like, I feel like I'm trying to do everything right with God, and yet everything comes back down, and like nothing has happened to my twin brother, crazy enough. Like, he's had other kind of problems with his body, but I feel like I'm sort of the black sheep in that way. I tend to go to victim mode fairly easily.
And so why did you decide to go to Costa Rica for Bible school?
Yeah,
Why
good
not
question.
like the US or somewhere else?
Yeah, so I was actually just wanting to go as far away from home as possible. I think I was sort of like on a Jonah mission where I was saying, okay, I want to leave. I want to get out of the French life as much as possible. I had started work at 15 as a dental technician. So my whole job was, as starting at 15, was in the professional arts. Between school and work, you kind of learn the trade and hands-on, and then you go to school to learn the business side of things. And so I was in dental tech for the last 15 years of my life, and just was like, okay, I need to get out of here. I need to get out of this. I need to get out of away from my family and figure out who I was, or at least go on and start that mission of trying to figure out who I am. I still don't really know who I am today, but so that's kind of why I left for Costa Rica. There was a Bible school very close to my home in France, called Champfleury, and it's part of the Torchbearer schools around the globe. There's many of them, and I basically looked at what was the furthest one away. And I also wanted to learn Spanish, so I was like, okay, I'm not gonna go to the States because there's, I mean, I already know English, so I thought that Costa Rica was gonna be a good destination for myself.
Wow. Okay. So after the operation and all that stuff, and you get better, what happens next?
So what happens next is while I'm there, I meet my wife today, wife Erin, in Costa Rica. And basically we're just friends, really good friends, and we get to know each other, but I never actually think I'm gonna see her again. And so I'm telling this story because I think it's a story of hope for a lot of people that when I was growing up, I never thought I was going to get married. I never thought I was going to have kids. I never thought I was going to really have much of a future. I was very negative on life. I didn't really think I was going to live until I was, I mean, I didn't think I was going to reach 30, you know? And I think being in Costa Rica really helped me just to kind of start letting go of what I thought what my life was going to be and just let God kind of work inside of my life. And so then from that point on, I met my wife Erin, and Erin is comes from Atascadero here in California, and we became friends, and I went back to
Was she
Chicago to work there.
why was she in Costa Rica?
Yes, we were both in the same school together, so we were both going and doing the same studies
Okay.
abroad. When we left, though, we separated paths. I stayed in Costa Rica for 2 years. She left after one. And once I was done in Costa Rica, I went over to Chicago to be with two of my brothers that lived there and with their wives and kids. And I was still in a big research phase of like, okay, what do I do now? Because I still have this same-sex attraction. I'm still very attached. While I was in Chicago, my brother had, I told my brother finally. I had told a couple of people talking about my same-sex attraction, and I was like, "Do you know of anything that I could do to kind of find help? You know, in America, there's so many more resources than there are in France." And she's like, "Sure, here I got a friend that you know he has a church downtown, and it was in Boys Town, or I think it's called Boys Town, essentially the gay district of Chicago." And I go there and I meet with the pastor, and he's like, "Hey, by the way, if ever you just want to come and you get married to a guy or to a girl, like we're fully accepting." And I was like shocked. I'm like, "Wait, what? I can't, like you're feeding into what my cross is and what I've been struggling against my whole life. You can't just tell me that it's okay to do what I've thought all of my life was not okay." I don't know, has that happened to you too? Have you been in those type of churches?
Because no the with the church, because I got saved 14 years ago at Reality LA, where Tom used to go, and I've been at that church since. And yeah, it's been clear from the beginning that it's a sin. So yeah.
Totally.
And it was clear to me the day I got saved. Like I it was like God just it was so clear, crystal clear, that like homosexual behavior was a sin and that it was no longer a part of my life and that's not who I was. It was so instant, like instantaneous. So yeah.
No, that's really cool to hear. And I mean, I just didn't know what to think about it. I was like, I can't believe that there are things like this. But I kept a cool head on my shoulder. I was like, cool, I'll connect back with you if I need to. Thanks for the intro, and left. And I was kind of feeling discouraged, but it was good because it kind of just reinforced the thought of like, okay, what is it that I do want with my life? Finally, I start meeting up with Erin over FaceTime, my wife today. And I'm just like, hey, these people, and I was kind of getting a culture shock in Chicago, West Chicago, and in Wheaton, the Wheaton area, and it's very like a different breed of people over there. And I was like, I'm trying to figure out how to connect with people. I am very sensitive and know how to connect with ladies more than I was able to connect with guys back at the time. And so I would often connect with women, but then it would be really like, oh, I can't talk to you because you're a man and I'm a married woman. And there was always this dynamic. I was like, this is weird. Like, I'm not trying to like, I don't have the hots for you. I'm just trying to connect with people here. And so I was talking with Aaron, and I was saying like, hey, I don't understand how these Americans work. So then I finished by just kind of connecting with Aaron over longer periods of time. And I tell her my testimony. I'm like, hey, I'm actually kind of looking for a wife, but she has to know that this is what I kind of struggle with. And it's not going to be an easy cross to bear for her or for me. And this is just the way it is, right? And she's like, okay, well, I don't want to keep on having these conversations if you're not going to start dating me. I'm like, what? Like, I didn't ask to start dating you. I don't understand why you would ever want to date me now that I've told you this either. So it was a really weird interaction that I had with her. So funny thing is that while we were talking, she was listening to a couple of podcasts and doing her own research, and she was saying, like, to one of her roommates, kind of came up to the idea of being like, hey, if I meet a guy and he struggles with same-sex attraction, I don't think it would be a huge issue for me. Like, I know it wouldn't be for many women, but I don't feel like that's a huge problem. And she had shared that with me, and I was like mind blown, because every girl I'd ever told, like, they're like, okay, see ya, babe. Like, see you
Yeah.
later. I'm not gonna talk to you, you know? And I was like, okay, fine. If you want to start dating, it's pretty low risk. You're in California. We'll zoom in as much as we can, and we'll see what happens. And amazingly enough, like, we had a relationship, and we really fostered. So the things that we kind of figured out in our relationship was like, okay, we're building this relationship off of friendship first off. I feel like a lot of people inside of our culture work off of a spark. And
Yeah.
they're like, hey, you can't really enter into a relationship if you don't have a spark with the other person. And we, from the get-go, were like, I don't really have a spark for you, but I can see that you would be a really good person to raise kids with. I feel like you would be a really good wife slash husband. And let's just see what happens, right? We're not deeply in love with each other, and that's really just not our thing. But we're going to be committed. And so being able to, like, have there's three things. So sexual attraction, physical attraction, so sexual attraction, friendship, and deep passion for one another, or being closely vulnerable with one another, is the third one, right? So you can't have two without having the other. So we were really banking off of, like, being friends and being really deep with one another and just sharing everything between one another. And I told her, like, hey, I don't know if this is the right call, but I'm going to just keep on trusting God. Like, it took a while before I told her, like, I'm still not attracted to you, and we're engaged and we've kissed, and I still don't know what's going to happen on our wedding night, and I'm scared. But at the same time, I know that I was feeling peace with God. God was always with me, and he always kind of, like, led the way, you know?
Yeah.
So I felt extremely blessed, and she was okay with that. And I was like, okay, at some point when she's not going to be okay and she's going to want to dump me, I got to believe that that's going to be okay, because that's what God has for me. I was really thinking, like, there's no way she's going to go through with this. But then we finally came through, and we were married, and it wasn't all, like, flashing, like, you know, what do you call those, colors, and everything was perfect. But we were committed to one another at working our life out together. And we share this story today to be like, hey, look, we didn't work off of a spark. We worked off of friendship, and we built it from there. And we're continuously always learning to know how to be more vulnerable towards one another. But throughout all those years, though, this is what I wanted to share, is that it was really hard to ever share something like that with anybody, especially with my family. I hadn't shared my same-sex attraction with anyone until I shared it with my cousin first, and then my sister, and then my twin brother. My twin brother didn't even know. But I was probably, like, 20, around there, and I had to build myself up to it. It didn't come naturally to just open myself up and say, hey, this is what I am, what I struggle with. And then I eventually told my mom and my dad, and they were very proud of me. And I still don't have the relationship that I wish I had with my father, and that's just kind of where it is for now, you know. And I'm praying that things get better too. It was sort of always a rocky relationship, and I always thought that what I had, my struggle with same sex, was always kind of blamed upon someone else. It wasn't about me. It was somebody else that inflicted that on me. And so, anyways, my dad was very much on that side of things, and I've had to have a lot of conversations with him. And I don't think he really still gets it, but he's gracious enough to still be like, yeah, no, I'm still pretty okay with where we're at. And I'm like, want to get to know me?
Yeah.
I want to keep on developing this. Let's keep on talking. He's like, I can't talk anymore. This is too much. So I love my dad, but he's a.
That's like my dad was the same way. Yeah. He was very, yeah. We didn't communicate that much. It was just like, hey dad, hey Beck, how are you? Good. Okay, bye. Yeah. And we had one conversation about when I came out, when I was 22, or when they found out, my parents found out. We had one conversation and he was super sweet about it. He was just like, he thought it was his fault. He's like, are you angry at me for, anything? Like, did I do anything wrong as a father? I'm like, well, I didn't say this at the time, but I was like, well, I mean, I was the youngest of eight kids. So it's like my dad had
Oh, wow.
zero time for me, like literally zero
Totally.
time. He was a lawyer. He'd super busy, support. And so I had very limited interaction with him throughout my whole life. And
Totally.
so I get that. My dad was a man's man. And so he was just like
Yeah.
so confused but I always say like I had five brothers. So my five brothers like were all like macho, played sports. And so my dad, that satisfied him. Like he was fine. So it wasn't such a big deal for me, to be gay
Your
at that
brothers
time.
will pick up the slack to be
Yeah,
able
they picked up
to
the slack.
teach you how to be a man.
Yeah,
That's funny.
exactly.
I think that was actually my situation too. I was one of five brothers and two sisters, and my father didn't have very much time because the requirements of a church in France are so much more demanding. And it's funny, I don't know what it was for you, but like the requirements of how the family structure was posed in these last two generations from my grandfather to my father to me, was that my grandfather was like, hey, I'm going to be taking care of the missionary front and taking care of the church front and taking care of the church and everything like that. You're going to stay home and you're going to take care of the kids. And from what I kind of went through digging with my aunt and father, there was never really very much like connection that they had with their dad, but they always thought he was great. But then my dad did the same thing with my mom, and they're like, hey, I'm going to go and take care of the church, and you're going to take care of the kids. And it was the way that they did it. I don't blame them. They were super hard workers. But I think that, like, understanding that when you're a couple, and especially me today, I have kids now, which is bonkers to me that I would ever have kids. Like, you need to invest in your children. You need to be there. You need to be regularly talking with them about
Yeah.
what their sexuality is about, what who they are, making them understand that like there are things that you're going to feel and it's not going to match up with what we believe, and we can talk about it and that's okay. Because I was terrified ever telling my dad, because of how he talked about gay people. And yet he loved the person, he just hated the ideology, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I told my friend, I won't say his name, but I told my friend who he just had a baby like almost a year ago, a baby boy, and I was like, to avoid any complications in his life in terms of S same sex attraction, like please just constantly as an infant, like just hold him. Let it like skin on skin, let him be like attached because you need that attachment. You need that attachment. And I said, tell him all the time you love him and that you're proud of him and that just like shower him with love and attention. And
Totally.
like that, especially in the first like few years, like that's so crucial. And he's like, yeah, I'm definitely doing that. Oh, so yeah, I didn't get that. I didn't get, the shower of love. But I don't blame him. Like my dad's in heaven now. It's like,
No.
and my mom is too. And so, I don't blame him because, he was busy. But
Yeah.
it is what it is. So obviously you went through with the wedding.
All right.
What
We
year was
did.
this?
This was 2018.
Hmm.
Well, yeah, we went through the wedding and we figured out what our relationship was all about. We heavily relied on just having deep friendship and conversation and emotional connection as being like our way to communicate. And really, like, we found our way into our sexual relationship through that, and feeling like, hey, I can't really have a sexual connection without really just kind of pouring out my heart to who I am and where I'm at in life. And it's been actually, honestly, I think that the more we kind of start assessing, the more we realize a lot of our friend groups, friends that we have, you know, that are the same age and same situation, a lot of them struggle with being able to share everything with their spouse. And so yeah, that's we moved to France after we got married, to for me to finish my studies back in college and get a business degree, finish my degree. And she learned French, and we had our first kid there, Shepherd. She lived through the French hospital, the French system, the French midwives, and was a real rock star about it, and learned French and learned how to, you know, grow inside of a French community, which is so different from America. And yet she did it, right? And so I was just really thankful for that. She is a lot more. So she's the daughter of a psychologist here in Atascadero, and has a very good handle on what family systems are supposed to look like and understanding how families work. She's learning how to become an MFD herself, so she was able to share things with my grandmother that was still alive at the time and my parents today. And I'm like, what are you doing talking about sex? You don't talk about that in my family. That's not part of our culture. You just can't just go for it. And she's like, yeah, no, we just talk about it. It's fine. And they'll just be a little bit uncomfortable, or that she's not afraid of going there. So I'm very thankful for my wife. And it was a very, very interesting time. We spent COVID with my parents. When Italy had just locked down, we were locked down right after that because we were right next to the Italian border. So we were the next region that got hit in Europe with COVID. And we were just like, okay, this is what's happening. And yeah, we spent the whole 3 months with my parents living in their house and having a baby and figuring out how I could be connected with my parents and still not getting what I'm always wanting out of my relationships. So it's interesting because my whole life has been sort of a pursuit of wanting to get. So I don't know. I don't know if this was the same for you, but for me, ever since I figured out that I had same-sex attraction, or that I was maybe touched as a kid by, you know, not molested, but inappropriate things had maybe happened. Always trying to go back inside of my past and figure out why that happened, or how that happened, or who did that, to be able to sort of unblock all of my problems today. And that's just not the way that the world works. It's not, and I wallow in the past a lot. So my wife is there, and she keeps me my head afloat, and she says, no, we're gonna work on what we can do in the future. So we lived in France for 3 years, and now we're back in Atascadero. We moved back to Atascadero, and I started sharing my story more openly, wanting to mentor other guys that struggle with that as well, just because there's really not very many resources. And the question of identity is a huge one for me, just because growing up, I had to know what I wasn't. Like, I knew what I wanted, and yet I had to say no to those things, and I had to morph myself into knowing what I was not. Does that make sense? So you kind of carve out your identity through knowing what you're not, and then figuring what you are after that, whatever's left over. So I think I'm still working through my identity, but God's been super gracious in opening up doors with people that have gone through the same thing, and me helping young men out, figuring out who they are in Christ as well, and that being really the most important thing inside of my life.
And so is that what so you're and what are you so what are you doing now in terms of work and what is it, Tescadero? What's it called? Tescadero.
Yeah, Atascadero, San Luis Obispo
San
County.
Luis Obispo. Okay.
Okay,
So
yeah.
are you and your wife, how many kids do you have now?
I got two kids now. Had my
Wow.
second, yep.
Are you having
Yes,
more?
I just got a vasectomy. So
Okay.
no, normally not, but
So
we'll see.
that's over. And so what are you doing now? So you're there, you help, young guys with this issue. Are you working in ministry or are you working in the business world there?
Yeah, so I'm working in
Or
the
both?
business world right now. I'm working for software, and I'm looking at in I'm a customer success manager for a software company here on the Central Coast, and I also help out guys with same-sex attraction as a ministry, and just trying to help people that are looking. And so I have a couple of guys that I follow all around the globe, actually, a lot in France too, because there's just not very many resources there. And so many missionary kids, pastor kids kind of end up with this, and they really don't know who to turn to or where to turn. So yeah, I do it as a ministry, but on my own time. It's not like I don't have their website or anything. But it's been really empowering, because I think growing up, I don't know about you, but I had mentors follow me my whole life. And so mentors were a huge lifeline for me, learning how to be able to live and struggle through life, and knowing that, like, yes, life is terrible in so many ways, and my emotions kind of go up and down like a roller coaster, and yet God remains faithful. And that's where those mentors really stayed close to me, and being able to just say, like, hey, I know it's hard, now let's just keep on going. Like, you don't have much of a choice, right? This is the path forward. And so I want to be able to be that mentor to other people too, and just know that, hey, there is hope. Not to just stay inside of this life where you think that you're never going to be able to have a wife and have a like sexual relationship with a woman, because that was never inside of my mind before. Like, God builds miracles, and he will remain faithful if, he will be faithful even if you're faithless. And I think that's my biggest takeaway throughout my whole life, is just like been a series of miracles. Just saying, like, hey, I need to be able to give this to other people and figure out where they're at with their life, and whether if they want to change or not. Because a lot of these guys, they know if they struggle with something, but do I need to change? That's the other question, right? So yeah, I would say that that's kind of where I'm at right now. I really don't know what God wants to do with me in the future, or what he wants to do with me down the line. But Aaron and I talk about it all the time, and we're saying, like, hey, yeah, we're going to talk about our story, but how is that going to get displayed? I'm not sure. So yeah, it's been quite good, but I'm always looking for new guys to talk with and be like, hey, where are you at? And how can I help you get to? I'm a customer success manager, so I think I'm learning a lot in my job as software, understanding what kind of outcomes you're looking for. And now I'm like, hey, I can totally like put this inside of my ministry like gig, and be like, hey, what is the outcome that you're looking for? Like, our outcome should be God, but then after that, what do you want to do with your life, right?
And so that's amazing. I love your story. What how can people, if I mean people are going to hear this and they're going to be like, I want to contact Mark. I mean, do you have like are you obviously you're on social media? Or what's the best way people
Yes.
can contact you if they see
No,
this?
I totally, yeah. I
We're
don't
gonna get like a
can I
thousands
give
of
my
emails.
I'll give you my email, that's fine. I love going through emails. I'll figure out what to do with. I'm not very present on social media. So just to kind of go back, I'm sorry, I'm not very linear. I'm French. I go back and forth in stories. When I was a young kid, I was like confronted to pornography too, right? So that's a big part of my story as well. Never fell into where I was like, I'm struggling with this daily, but I know that that was a big part of like where my thoughts kind of went. And I think I found that a lot of people that struggle inside of their marriage, or struggle just even with same-sex attraction, porn is a huge part of it, and that's a thing that needs to get t rid be needs to get taken care of and left away with. And so I want to help other people do that.
That I mean when I was growing up, I'm much older than you, and so when I was growing up, porn was not available. You know, it wasn't like you could
Right,
just
right.
pick up your phone. It was like you had to go to this like creepy store in a creepy part of town, and like it was so weird. So yeah, the accessibility of it now with the internet and social media, I mean, with the internet is like so damaging to so many people.
Totally.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people would like help with that too, if you know, if they could
Yeah,
talk.
for sure. For sure. And just knowing that, like, deliverance comes. Okay, the last part I wanted to talk about was as we were getting married, right? Erin and I told her this was my struggle, but then we kind of came to realize, like, hey, this is my cross to bear throughout my life, and this will be my cross to bear until I die. And everybody has a cross to bear. What is yours, right? So, like, the idea of same-sex attraction, yes, is a cross to bear and is very blunt and is very direct, but everybody else has something that they're going to struggle with throughout their life. So what is it that you struggle with, and are you looking to solve or to understand how God's going to take this and use it for his good? So many times we think that we're broken and messed up and nothing can come out of it, but reality is that once we understand how broken we are and how much Jesus we need, that's where the real power comes out, right? And so that's also just like what I want to push people towards is understanding, like, get into your struggle and share your struggle across with as many people as you can, because literally you're pulling the devil into the light every time you do, and his power diminishes and your like the power of God increases. And so too many times people stay inside of the closet and it festers and it kills, you know. So
It's always I always recommend people, you know, if they're struggling with this, to talk to, you know, youth pastor or whatever, someone you trust or close friends you trust in the church. And because, yeah, as you said, the devil loves to work in darkness, and all that shame and guilt and like all that stuff is going on. But once you expose it to the light, then people can pray for you, they can check in on you, they can, you know, love you and bear your burdens. So it's so important to be open to at least you know, at least one person in your life, in your church or whatever.
totally. And to be for me, as I was growing up in the church does not have very many good responses, especially in France. They did not have any good responses. Like, well, you should probably pray more and read your Bible more and stay celibate for the rest of your life. That was as good as you were going to get it. And reality is today you have so many more resources, but the best resource is going to be to go towards a close friend or somebody that you can trust inside the church that can listen to you and just say, hey, I get it. It's hard. And let's walk together, you know? Because I think too many times the church has done wrong, but not because they were trying to. They just didn't have very many answers. They don't, it's a new thing, it's a new generation. My parents had no idea what to do with it because they were never confronted with people with same-sex attraction because it wasn't a thing. And now it's like, well, what do you want me to talk about for this, right? So now I have a lot more answers that I'm able to give to people, where when I was in France, there was one book a French friend gave me. It was translated in French, and it was this guy in Santa Barbara, and he had led a gay lifestyle and became Christian and then got married to a gal that was also same-sex attracted. And I read this whole book, and there was like this little address I sent an what do you call that,
A letter.
a letter from France all the way to this place in Santa Barbara, wondering if I was ever going to get a catch. I didn't have social media at the time. We didn't It wasn't that time yet, and never got anything back. But I'm like, man, if only I had had more resources. So
Who was the
I'm
guy? Who
getting
was the book? Who wrote the book?
this was like almost 20 years ago. I have
Okay.
no idea.
I was just curious.
I know.
Wow. Well, now, I mean, now, thankfully, there are so many resources now because this issue has become so dominant in the culture that
Totally.
there's just tons of resources. So yeah, that's the good news about this issue and the culture.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that it kind of relates to everybody, though, because identity and the struggle of knowing who you are in Christ is a problem for everybody. Nobody really knows who they are until they're called by God. You're nobody until your parents actually give you a name and tell you how you are, who you are. And that's the reality that the new reality that it's got to be for all of us Christians to say, who are you calling me to be, Lord? And I don't feel like I am, a husband and father, and yet you've placed me in this place, and I'm going to live it out, even if it feels awkward. It's going to become part of my identity. And God's faithful, and He's going to join with you. So that's what I've found mostly is like when I share my testimony, it doesn't just resonate with people with same-sex attraction, it also resonates with a lot of people that don't know who they are, and that's most, unfortunately, most everybody, so.
Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you for coming on the show and sharing this. And if again, if people want to get in touch with you, what we'll put a link below, but
Yes.
what should we put below? Your email address?
I'll put my email address, marktabayu@gmail.com. I'm thinking of my work addresses, which this should not be the right platform. But yeah, marktabayu@gmail.com. My name is very complicated, as you guys see right there. I don't know if I'm pointing
Well, we'll put a we'll link to
but
it below. We'll link to it below, so people can email you if they want. But thank you so much for sharing that, Mark. I appreciate it.
yeah, for sure. Thank you very much. Thanks for putting this on, Beckett.
Yeah, and thank you guys for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Beckett Cook Show. Your support makes this content possible. All episodes of The Beckett Cook Show are also available on YouTube. For more information about Beckett and his ministry, visit his website at beckettcook.com.
Thank you to the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you will find more faith-centered podcasts about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
If you're hearing this right now, you're probably like, who the heck is this? And why are they playing during my favorite podcast? And I get it. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do want to introduce myself. My name is Trevor Tyson, and I'm the host of Trevor Talks, where we talk to real people about real topics and real stories. I just want to invite you, if you love podcasts, if you love music, if you love books and love hearing from the people who create it, come check us out at Trevor Talks. Simply go to Google or Life Audio, type in Trevor Talks, and it'll pop on up. Hope you have a great day.